begin to develop a new kind of inner balance, and you can almost have a what I think of as a superhuman strength within yourself. When you get this awakening process begins to take over, you get so strong inside, because fighting anything makes you very weak, but loving something makes you very strong, okay, because you collect energy with love. It's like networking versus a bureaucracy. When you network, you're not trying to gain any power, you're giving it away. And the more you give away, the stronger you get. You can get not only psychically or psychologically strong, but you get even physically stronger as well, because you're living in that place that has no limits now, that place where you are thought, and there are no rules for thought. There's no time, there's no beginning, no end, none of that stuff. Your body begins to take on the same kind of characteristics, and you get stronger, and it gets easier, and you can't wait to do it again. And it's more and more and more inner strength, inner balance tends to come into your life. You begin to sense the aliveness of the world. I mentioned it before that everything is alive. And you begin to see that aliveness. And you see it everywhere. You're not looking at the stagnancy of life. So like each day becomes this exciting place where you sense aliveness everywhere. And you even sense it in places where you didn't see it before. I mean, right outside our front door, we've got this massive spider web. And this beautiful spider with like red claws on it. I've never seen a spider quite like it. It's been there for months and months. And every time a real strong wind comes or the rain comes, it sort of repairs it. And we go out there every day and we're very careful not to knock it down. And each one of my kids goes through the thing with the spider, and it's almost become this friend for them. You begin to see things in places where before that was just an annoyance. I mean, there's a spider web. All these spiders, they're everywhere. You see the miracle of life everywhere. As you awaken, you become extremely sensitive to the feelings of others. And even to their thoughts. The linking between thinking and feeling is increased. You begin to sense it very, very strongly. This increased sensitivity that you start to sense is part of that compassion that is built into as you become more and more aware. And that compassion allows you to be a better businessman. It allows you to be a better father or a better mother. It permits you to be a better athlete. It permits you to be virtually everything and an improved level. When I'm playing tennis now, I used to think that I had to beat my opponent. Now I don't think that at all. I send my opponent love. I really do. Right in the middle of a match, I am not trying to beat him. The enemy, if I have to have one, is the ball. That's the only thing. I'm just trying to do as many fantastic, clever, brilliant things with that ball that I can. The other guy on the other side is part of me, and I wish him the best. Even when I'm in the most dramatic of times in competition, and I play competitively, and I play to win, I still don't want to win by default. I know that my opponent wants to win as much as I do. And when I do that, it's almost like my sending him this love through thought takes away the weakening that happens when you're fighting your opponent. Because you're fighting him, you get mad at him, you didn't like the call that he just made, and you're doing all of this stuff that brings you down. But when you don't do that, you're more at peace, and then you almost always win. It's the irony again. You play so much better by sending out that. So you become not only sensitive to the feelings of others, but you become sensitive to the thoughts of others as well. And you begin to sense what people are thinking. And it happens more and more and more. And you can look at someone and know, and you can just identify it, and it can happen. It happened to me this afternoon. I was sitting on the dais. I gave a talk. I received the Golden Gavel Award, which is a really wonderful honor from the Toastmasters as their Distinguished Speaker of the Year. And the lady sitting next to me was the wife of the president of Toastmasters International. Her name was Inez. I was sitting there thinking to myself, how many students do you have in your school? And we had been talking, she was a school principal, and just as I was about to ask her that question, she said to me, there's about 350 students in our school. It's almost like there was a sensitivity there. And most people say, oh, that's a coincidence and all that. But you'll only see that when you believe it. That happens all the time to me. All the time. I will say something, and I'm sensitive enough not just to the feelings, but to what people are thinking. And you can practice that. You get better and better and better at it. It's like you're on a different frequency now, just like the radio. You're just tuning in a little finer than you used to tune in. And it's there for you. It's there for all of us. We develop a quiet mind as we become more awakened. And this quiet mind is really, I mean, we could do 16 tape series on just what it means to have a quiet mind. But it's really an absence of judging, and an absence of negativity, and an internal harmony and peace with everything that you see. And so you're not fighting anything. And you understand that whatever is, and that includes your desire to improve it. So you just busily get about working at improving it, or doing whatever it is that is important for you to do, whether it's selling snookers or whatever it may be. If that's what you are, but you do it quietly inside, without the judgment. it gets easier and easier and easier. And then meditation becomes something that you get better at, and you start moving towards the light in that direction. And it gets real easy to go off to sleep at night. In fact, you can hardly wait to leave your form. You can hardly wait because you know that your dreams are going to be fantastic tonight. Every dream that we have, to me, is just to learn the very lesson of life. That is how to turn an obstacle into an opportunity. And we do it all the time. We begin to change our food habits. We become more balanced as we become more awakened. We're more conscious of what we eat and what we kill. We also change our attitudes towards sex. Sex is no longer something that you do. It is no longer something that you do to someone, but it is a participatory dance of creation. Even if you're not wanting to have a baby with it, it no longer is something that you have to continually prove yourself at. It's now an expression of your aliveness. It's another beautiful, harmonious way to be with someone in a loving way, rather than a need to prove anything to anyone. And it might even be less frequent, but it is more personal in the sense that it is not a doing, it is a being now. And it is just your natural way of expressing yourself. One of the interesting things I've found about awakening is that you have a change in memory. Recent events become lost. A lot of times people can't remember something that just happened an hour ago or 20 minutes ago, and they find themselves really upset about that. And very often that's a clue that you're into a higher awakening process. In the sense that as you become more transformed, you live more in the present moment. And past events are just that now. They're just gone. They're just thoughts. And they're thoughts that no longer have to apply. You're so involved in the present moment. You're almost hooked into it. You're divinely in this now, the working unit of your life now. It's called being less attached. And also you find that you're able to give things away that you couldn't before. You don't have to hoard things and hang on to a whole lot of stuff any longer. You can just let it go to somewhere else, someplace else, without telling yourself that the only reason I'm hoarding stuff is I'm afraid that if I run out of nows, someday I'll have a then to look to. You don't worry about thens any longer as you awaken, because you know you'll never run out of nows. Now is all there is. As you do that, as you become more and more fixed in what Maslow called the peak experience of the now, you just let go of the past. And people think it's a faulty memory, and it really isn't. It's just, I don't want that anymore. I'm not going to relive that. I'm here, and that's almost an unconscious process. You lose also the ability to have your mind organize itself in linear ways. You used to organize everything, and you think things all the way through, and you have to have a formula, and everything has to be put into a certain place. That starts to be less and less and less important as you awaken. And you find yourself less organized and less concerned with the organization. Organized perhaps to serve you, but not where you're serving it. The linear way that you thought before is no longer possible, that this causes this, and I have to do this, and if I do this, and if I have these goals, and I'm going to reach these, and I'm going to do the next thing. You tune into your formlessness, to the magnificence of now, and you aren't at all consumed with how it all organizes, because you know it's all perfect anyway, and you don't have to get it all straight, and you don't even think about how it's going to be straight. And the paradoxes that are out there, the things that don't seem to fit into the puzzle, are all okay now. You don't have to get everything answered and figured out. You're just sort of more into formlessness and less into linear. You begin to have a diminished motivation to achieve and acquire, especially as it was expressed formerly in competition and having to beat somebody else. And so much of our life we spend in competition, you find that achievement will increase and acquisitions will increase, perhaps. Certainly they have for me. More books, more tapes, more speaking engagements, more opportunities, more money comes into my life. If I want more things, it's fine. But I have a diminished motivation for those things completely. And my need to have to beat somebody. I was playing somebody in tennis the other day who I always beat, okay? Always. And he was ahead of me 5-4. And it started to rain real hard. There was a time when I would have said, we're going to sit here until the rain goes and the court dries, and we're going out there, and I'm going to win, and I'm going to get the next two games. And he said to me, would you mind if we stop? I said, that'd be great. He said, what? He said, I haven't been ahead of you in so long, I haven't even won a set off of you. And I said, that's all right. It's okay. That's a real shift. You're looking at and listening to a very competitive person out there. I run down everything. I'm the Boris Becker of the tennis set for 47-year-olds. I'll throw myself at any tennis ball. But I have a diminished need to have to beat somebody in the process. Outer events become irrelevant other than as they create harmony or turbulence in your life. You're not focused on outer events all the time. And instead, you now begin to see that every event in your life or every person in your life is either going to create harmony or they're going to create turbulence in your life. And the extent to which they do one or the other are helpful to you in terms of moving towards harmony or away from turbulence. And the more you move towards harmony, the less consumed you become with what those events are. You just see them as part of how you, whoever you are, all the thoughts, feelings, and form that you are, all the gristle and all the thought that you are, can either be in harmony or be in turbulence. And you just use events that way rather than being consumed by them. another thing that really happens is your heart starts to open. That's the way a lot of people describe it. My heart just started opening. I call it going through a gate. You just sort of walk through this gate, and it opens up, and you look back, and you say, it's like I'll never go back to where I was before. It's like you have a whole new you, and you're open to so many new things. And one of the things with your heart opening is this wonderful quality of unconditional love. And unconditional love means just what it says. There are no conditions on it. And it's because that's what you are. That's what you think. And that's what you have to give away. And you suddenly find yourself giving love away in places where other people had revenge in mind. I see stories all the time in newspapers about how somebody gets harmed in a family, and then the family is going to find this person, and they go to the court. They want them to get the death penalty, and they're so filled with revenge and rage and so on. We've got to find some place within us, a place where we can eliminate some of these horrible things that human beings do to each other. And the way that we're going to do that is not through revenge and not through more hurt and more pain and more fighting and more weakening of ourselves, but finding within us the option or the opportunity of giving love away in those places. Tough, of course it is. Difficult, yes. I'm not saying that it isn't. Not so much that it's tough, but we haven't grown up that way. We've grown up to believe that you right a wrong, and the way that you right a wrong is by harming somebody else. And so consequently, we create families like that and cities like that and nations like that, and we have a planet like that where we've all chosen upsides. The more we do that, the more we harm ourselves and each other. Belief that there is enough to go around, and that abundance is a way of life, and that you can have virtually anything that you want for yourself. There's no scarcity out there. All you have to do is use your power of visualization. Understand that everything you visualize is already here. Otherwise, you couldn't have thought it in the first place. It's not in another planet. It's not in another universe. It's right here. And then connect to that. Be that power source. Those are some of the specific qualities that I see as clues that you can look at. Do you see yourself doing some of these things? I see myself doing them all the time. Do you see yourself reading things that you didn't read before and understanding things and talking about the miracles that are there and believing in stuff that you used to just put down as utter foolishness and sending out love where you used to send out hate and not being in such a hurry and not defining yourself by your roles and having more love to give away to other people? If you find yourself doing that, you're part of this awakening process. And whether you like it or not, it's got you. As Marilyn Ferguson said in The Aquarian Conspiracy, written back in the 70s, there's an entire network of good guys who are involved in this in every field of human endeavor, medicine, education, religion, business, you name it. And this network is all of these people on the one side of harmony who are working towards a more harmonious self and a more harmonious universe. And then there's a whole other group who are on the side of tumultuousness. And all you have to do is decide what side you're on. And as soon as you make up your mind about what side you're on, then you try to help put the universe and ourselves and our human race back into a universe. One song. Not 400 different songs. One song. What I'm doing in these tapes is to unmuddle the metaphysical somewhat. It stays in the fuzzy area as long as each person is fuzzy about the things that they can't touch and get a hold of and smell and see with their senses. The logic of it is almost inescapable. A human being is more than the form that they occupy. They must be. The evidence for it is dramatic. The evidence that your form changes physically all the time, and yet who you are continues. And I can remember being 12 years old, yet there's not one physical part of me that was there at 12 that is there now. So that there's something that keeps going in a human being that is outside of form. And of course, we know thoughts and feelings and conscious awareness and all of these kinds of things that seem so amorphous, so abstract, so difficult to handle. And yet we live with it all the time. And hopefully this program will help people to not be afraid of the areas that they can't hold on to, that they can't grasp and put in their hand. There's nothing really mysterious about it. And that we're really talking about nothing that would threaten anybody. This is not an anti-religion approach or a pro-religion approach. It's a spiritual approach. But it's not spiritual in any, if you don't go to church every Sunday and do what I tell you to do, then you're going to be punished approach at all. It's recognizing that there are multidimensional factors to a human being. There is the form factor, and you have to honor the form that you have. and take care of it, because it does house your soul and your essence, whatever that is. And then there's the next dimension of those things that we can't get a hold of, yet we're always involved in, and that is the way that we process things, how we think. And that's in a different dimension than the form that way. And then there's the next dimension up, which is the dimension of spirituality or higher consciousness, which is really the dimension of love and being willing to have it and to give it away. And the principles, the universal laws that I see, having gone through as much of the literature as I can on enlightenment, that goes back hundreds of centuries, and even with the contemporary literature. And I see these given specific principles. The first is that thoughts are things, that thoughts are more than just some amorphous quality. They are the very stuff of the universe. They are vibrational patterns, whatever you want to label it. It is the key to understanding yourself as a human being. That how you think and how you process is what makes you a human being. And everything that is in a pig or in a horse is in a human being, except for the mind. And the mind is the capacity to think. And how you use that capacity determines all of your humanity. It determines how you operate at the lowest levels in form and matter, and how you operate at the thought level, and, of course, how you operate at the conscious awareness level, the level of complete love and harmony with the universe. The second concept is that we have the ability to transcend our form. I call it transformation. Form is in the middle. Trans means to go beyond. Ation, shun, means the experience of going beyond your form. That's what Christ was able to do in the miracles that he was able to perform. Like everything that we have in life that is in form or in matter was created by using our mind, applying it to matter, and manipulating matter in such a way as to produce a product. Whereas when you get to transformation, you can literally manipulate matter and make things happen by going beyond your form. And a transformed person is really one who, more than anything else, just understands that I am more than my form. I am grander than all of that. And I have the capacity to watch myself through these various roles that I have taken on in my lifetime, and to stand back and know that that isn't all that I am. And all that I am is this ability to think and process in such a way that I can make all of it work for me and never judge myself. Then the principle of paradox. We are all paradoxes, and we have difficulty understanding and grasping that, because paradox is paradox. Paradox means the very thing that we are struggling with is that it says one thing and it's something else at the very same time. At the very same moment that we are form, we are non-form. At the very same moment. And we can never escape the dualism. It's always there. So you stop fighting it, and you don't worry about it, and you don't antagonize over it. You see yourself as having a free will within a completed universe. It's all okay. Those paradoxes are there. The person who seeks the most approval gets the least. The person who gets the most approval cares the least about it. The person who has to have love in their life and demands it is not loving. The person who doesn't care and is love and sends it out and radiates it gets all the love they can handle. It's all a paradox. Then the principle of enlightenment is the way. There is no way to enlightenment. Enlightenment is the way. It's really a principle of living it rather than seeking it. Of not trying to get someplace, but being it. It's being versus striving. It's arriving. It's now. It's the working unit of your life. And you live it each and every day. And the higher principles of enlightenment, which are talked about throughout this program, are not things that you'll ever get. They are something that you give away. Unified life, or unity, that we're all one. A concept very difficult for us to grasp, but I think that analogy of the earth, when we all know that the earth is round, it's impossible to choose up sides. If you get back far enough, you can't have sides on something that is round. Well, that's us, each one of us, and we're all connected to all the rest of us. The principle of abundance, that there's no scarcity in the universe. Everything that you need to have in your life is here. You just have to believe it, and it will begin showing up in your life. And if you don't, you'll only get what you continuously defend. Detachment as a concept. Not hanging on to anything, understanding that you come in with nothing, we leave with nothing, and that all of this plane that we live on, you can't own anything. So you don't let anything own you as well. Detachment means not letting anything own you and you not owning anything, just flowing with it, enjoying it while it's here, and not becoming attached to it and having to have it. The notion of what goes around comes around. What you put out in the world is what you're getting back. See, to me, it isn't some scorekeeper who says for everything you do bad, you're going to get something bad back, and for everything you do good, you're going to get something good. It isn't like that at all. It is whatever you're getting in your life is a result of what you're putting out. And if you don't like what you're getting back in your life, in any form, in any relationship, in money, or whatever it may be, then look at what you're putting out into the world instead of blaming the world for what you're getting. And finally, synchronicity. The understanding that there are no coincidences. It's the perfect universe. Everything that seems like a coincidence and seems so strange and how could that have happened is really part of the perfection of it all. And you'll start seeing it when you believe it. You'll see it more and more and more. You'll see those things happening inside. You'll nod. You don't have to prove it to anyone. You'll just go, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Yep, it did it again. You send out the energy, it'll work. It really does. Albert Einstein, who was far more than just a scientist and the inventor of the theory of relativity, but was a philanthropist and a philosopher and a very enlightened being, a very highly evolved being, very spiritual man, had this to say. A human being is a part of the whole called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest. A kind of optical delusion of his consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole nature in its beauty. You'll see it when you believe it.
This concludes Transformation, You'll See It When You Believe It. The concepts presented here are profound, and repeated listening will yield new insights to help you experience your own personal power. Nightingale Conant produces a wide variety of audio and video programs that offer you new approaches to living a no-limit life. We'd like to bring you an excerpt from another enlightening program by Dr. Wayne Dyer. It's titled, What Do You Really Want for Your Children? And it can help you raise happy, healthy children.
I was a kid that you probably will recognize, because almost all of you have one in your family. I came home from school in the third grade, after the first day of school, and my teacher's name was Mrs. Poole. And Mrs. Poole was talking to the principal. They were talking back and forth, and I heard Mrs. Poole say to the principal that Wayne Dyer was in her class. And the principal was sort of commiserating with her about that. And then I heard Mrs. Poole say that Wayne Dyer was a scurvy elephant in her classroom. Well, I didn't know what that meant. I'd never heard that term before. So I went right home to Mrs. Scarf, whose home we lived in, where a lot of children lived. She took in an awful lot of children in her lifetime. Some of them were handicapped in one way or another, and a lot of them were just poor, like we were. And she was terrific. And I asked her, what was a scurvy elephant? She said, well, I don't know. She said, but I'll check it out. So she got on the telephone and called the principal, and the principal said, oh, no, that's Wayne. He gets everything wrong. She didn't say that he was a scurvy elephant in her classroom. She said he was a disturbing element in her classroom, okay? Now, I'm going to be talking about scurvy elephants here. And being a scurvy elephant has certain kind of meaning to me because I lived that way all my life. I was one of those kids who was in trouble a lot, who was sort of, as Thoreau said, marching to his own music, to his own drummer, and wouldn't or couldn't be told what to do. I have to still admit to having a lot of difficulty with that. Being told what to do is something that I don't take kindly to. In doing my research for What Do You Really Want for Your Children, one of the things that we found out, which was really interesting, is that children who are raised to be blindly obedient and to do exactly as they're told and to never ask questions and to say, yes, sir, no, sir, three bags full, and you do things as you're told, those are the children with the highest levels of prejudice in their lives. That almost always, when you see people who have real high levels of prejudice, they were raised to be blindly obedient. And it makes sense when you think about it. Because if you don't let your children ask questions and inquire and think and want to figure things out why for themselves, they'll just say what they're told. And if you're told to hate this person over here because they have religious beliefs that are different than yours, then you just do that. A scurvy elephant would say, well, wait a minute. Why should I hate this person because I'd like to check that out. What does it mean to be have a different religious? Or why should I hate this person over here because their skin color is different than mine? How come? I don't understand that. Let me check. And they will go check those people out. And you find when you go check people out, that is when you go up to them and you talk to them, that you no longer need to prejudge them, which is what prejudice is. It's just prejudging. You suddenly find out that they're people just like you are. And so you eliminate prejudice. The way to eliminate prejudice is to have contact, to be with someone, rather than to be just sit back and say, no, I don't want anything to do with anybody who thinks like you do, who looks like you, who worships like you, who acts like you do, or who reads those kind of books, or who belongs to that political party, or whatever. And so if you want your children to be inquiring and open, then you have to be careful about raising them to be blindly obedient. In doing the research for this book, I also discovered a great quotation, which was that the one you can do the least with will probably make you the most proud.
For more information about what do you really want for your children, or to receive a free catalog with information about the rest of our programs, please call us toll-free at 1-800-323-5552. Thanks for listening, and come hear us again soon. This is the end of Side 12. Please fast forward the tape to cue up Side 11 for your next listening.